Yo, what is up? How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the, I guess, second installment of the Blake Makes Music podcast. Obviously, I'm Blake, you know. So welcome. How's it going? I've got a super, super cool show planned for today. We're going to talk about content for musicians, and we're going to go through a pretty extensive topic set. So we're going to have the collective concept. What is that? Does it replace a team? Should you have a collective? And then what is, how does that benefit you when making content? The other thing we're going to talk about is different content types that are popular right now that you should or maybe should not be investing your time into. And the other thing is content types for various niches within music or genres, if you will, right? And we may even talk a little bit about what to do if you're the kind of person that just doesn't want to make content. That's totally cool. So what are we going to do? Well, first things first, if you are watching this live, thank you so much. I do put this out on all content platforms. And we're going to be going over kind of a little bit different format as I am transitioning the show into a bit of a different setup than it was. I think it's going to be way better. And so what's going to happen is we have a format. We're going to start off with a couple of things. We're going to go into a bit of a lesson. And then the second half of the show, the second hour, we're actually going to have some, we're going to have at least one guest. And what this is we're going to have a guest by the artist named Remed. We've had him on the show before, and now we're doing it in a live stream format. He's super dope. I wanted to make sure he was our first guest that we have on the show because he was he offered a lot of great insight on the last time that he was on. So we're going to go over that, and then we're going to go over some Q&A. And the cool thing is now, if you would like to join the stream, you can do that. So you just join my Discord. You can video in. You'll see it's pretty cool. And it's going to be designed eventually kind of like, I'm going to date myself here, kind of like a Loveline call-in type thing where you can call in, video in on your phone. You could hold it vertically. It's totally cool. I've got all of that set up and you can ask questions. Maybe you're struggling with something with your music career or you're fuzzy on something. Maybe you don't understand anything about copyright or how to register your music or copyright. It could be about marketing. I work in advertising in my day job, so I have a lot of insights. I can help you out with that. Or it could be like, hey, I'm trying to find people, trying to network. It could be a plethora of things. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to thank you all for watching. I can't wait to get started. And I've got a lot of screens popping up here and a lot of chats. I'm going to try my best to look at the camera. So we've got some different different things media related. So we're going to try something. We're going to run a spot. Let's see how it works.
This podcast is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is the best place to put your music on all streaming platforms. Get paid when people listen to your music and develop a fan base by getting your music on all of the right places. Easy. DistroKid delivers to over 150 streaming services around the world and counting. Keep 100% of your earnings. DistroKid takes nothing from your royalties. With features like automatic payments to collaborators, legal cover song licenses, music video generators, and EPKs for every single release, DistroKid is the only distributor recommended by Blake Makes Music. Fast, easy, and cheap. DistroKid only costs $20 per year for unlimited singles, EPs, or albums. For a VIP discount of 7% off your first year, go to musicadvice.io.
Okay, so the commercials worked. All right, so I make my own commercials. If you can't tell, that's my voice, which is I thought was kind of fun. We're going to have some various different ones. I've got some really corny ones, some really cringe ones, all kinds of stuff. So let's do this. I want to talk a little bit about the show itself, what to expect going forward. I've got a cool segment that I've never done before that we're going to get into, and then we're going to get into the lesson. So first things first, the Patreon is reactivated. I am back. I've got so many cool things planned for that. I just got accepted into the beta version for video. So I will be doing some lessons there on music career stuff. The next one I've got planned for that, I'm going to be breaking those down into bite-sized little pieces on the Patreon. So the first thing I'm going to do is the lean business startup for musicians and what that looks like. And we're going to get a little bit into that today, just a little bit. And I'm going to have exclusive just content made for helping people make better business decisions with their music. It's going to be awesome. So you have to be in that music advice tier. I do have other tiers too. There's a support and a music tier, which is not super expensive. And you get all kinds of cool stuff. And one of those things that you get is that you can suggest content for the show. You can also send me things to react to. And now that I have Patreon video, I can actually put that there as opposed to getting copyright stricken down on YouTube. So anyways, that's what we're going to be doing, which is going to be really cool. The other thing I wanted to say is, before we get started into today's topic, is yes, I am going to plug this book. It is back. I do have it on promotion. Again, The Modern Artist Journal and Toolkit, everything you need to make music efficiently. This is kind of like my map for content strategy for musicians. And if you look in here, it is a free book, but it's got so many cool things. So it basically explains the music industry in a really, really easy way to understand. It tells you how to make content efficiently as a musician, and it gives you all kinds of little goodies here, like split sheets, all kinds of stuff, content schedules, all of that. It is free. You go to musicadvice.io. You can pick up your free copy. All you got to do is plug in your email address. And I promise you, I don't really send out too many emails, only when they're super important or I'm coming out with something that is needed. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, thank you so much. Here's what we're going to do. Today, we're going to try out something new. We're going to try out gear recommendations. Okay, this is kind of cool. I've been excited to do this because if you don't know, a long time ago, I used to work at Guitar Center for like 3 or 4 years at the West LA store. This is a long time ago. And back when I lived in Los Angeles, that was like my first like job out of music college, of course, because that's like the cycle. You know what I'm saying? You go to college for music and then you get out, you go, there's no job for music. What the heck? I was lied to. Well, you weren't lied to. You were just misled a little bit. So you go, you try to get a job. So you get something. I chose to work at Guitar Center and I fell in love with gear. I love gear. I don't think that there's anything that you could tell me about guitars that I don't know. Still, like I love it. Recording gear, all that good stuff. So I get a lot of questions about, hey, what kind of stuff do you recommend for mixing, mastering, this kind of stuff? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen. This is one of my favorite instrument plugins. This is going to be TuneTrack. This is not a sponsor of the show. This is just something that I personally love. And I want to say this because I want to tell you what it is if you're not aware. And then I also want to tell you why you should be paying attention. I wish they did affiliate links because I would be writing this super hard. But it is a really, really cool plugin for your DAWs. So they've got, they started out with, I want to say either Easy Drummer or Superior Drummer. But what it does is it helps you construct and arrange music, and you can get all of these awesome like packs and all kinds of stuff. But here's where I personally really like the TuneTrack products. I use something called Easy Mix, and I know people that are like actual like mixing engineers, they're going to be like, why would you use this? You could see here, it's literally like two knobs and presets, and everything's kind of built in. So if you use the ecosystem, you could say like, cool, give me a good mix for guitar. Give me a good mix for vocals. I want this type of vocal. It's all presets. It all sounds good together. So it all gels. And then on top of it, you could put it on your master channel or however you decide to master. You click a button and it sounds mastered. It's incredible. So there's all kinds of different genre packs and all that good stuff. I would say that if you want to save time and you want to make more music, this is a must have. And it's on sale. But I will say this, during Thanksgiving time, Black Friday, all of that good stuff, they do the craziest sales. Like they do like a deal of the day kind of thing. They'll do like, I think I got Easy Mix last year for like, or 2 years ago for like 80% off, which is crazy. And I use it every time I make music. I throw in Easy Mix on every channel. It's super fast. It's easy because it's about speed sometimes rather than trying to nitpick things that are going to sound the same thing. It's going to sound the same to people who listen to the music anyways. Like, let's be real, right? So making music faster, quicker, better, this is a must have.
This podcast is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is the best place.
I knew we were going to have a we're going to have a mess up there. I will fix that for sure. Anyways, that was hilarious. So welcome. You know, if you're in the chat, you can say hello. You may have your chat on the screen, and we're going to have our tech issues today. But what can we do, right? So anyways, today we're going to be talking about the content strategies that you need to know about as a musician. Okay, so let's go.
Lesson start.
All right, so content strategies for musicians. So I wanted to pick this because I had asked my Discord community, what's a good topic that you feel like would be needed? And we have a really active member, Alex Artificial, who makes really cool, interesting music, ask this question. And something that he wanted to unpack a little bit. And so what I wanted to do was just lay out what's on the playing field, how you could kind of use it. And he made a really good point about like even diving into what type of content should someone be making that maybe doesn't want to be on camera, as well as what type of content should someone be making for like each kind of like niche of music. So what I wanted to do is go over those different things. And I want to talk about why that kind of mentality is super important as you get started if you haven't done this already. So first things first is before you get started into deciding what type of content that you want to make, you really kind of have to know who your audience is. And so what companies do is they create what's called a customer profile. And you can create what's, you call it a fan profile, you know? And so what you want to think about is a couple things. Who are they? What kind of stuff do they like to do? What kind of music are they into? I would say pick five artists that sound similar to you, that have a similar type of vibe that you have, personality too. I would include all of that. Pick your five artists that you think would be the best representation of what you would like to become. And then build from that. Don't steal their career or anything like that. Don't steal their tracks. Don't steal their image. But like, just try to figure out like who really speaks to you the most that is in your playing field, right? So I would say that's the first step. The second step is pick your age demographics. That's super important too, because different people at different life stages will have different buying habits. So if you do pop music, your age that you're probably going to get more traction from is going to be on the younger side if it's like modern pop stuff mostly. And it also depends upon what type of like lyrical content you have. If you make music that has words, all of that good stuff, you want to make sure that you think about what age bracket that is. Why? Well, because people who are under 18 that listen to music go nuts over stuff that they're really into. They go hard. They're the biggest fans. And those are going to be the people that buy the shirts, the concert tickets, all that kind of stuff. And it's not even their money. It's their parents' money, you know? So that's something to think about. So you're going to want to make content and build your career around who your potential fan is, all right? So that's the first step. Age, maybe gender. You want to think about what other things that they could be into outside of that music. So for example, music, I would say less now, but still relevant, has been driven around counterculture. And I call myself like an old millennial because I have like the mentality of like an old guy, but I'm still like in that, like, I was born in like 88, you know, like I'm not super old, but I'm definitely at that tail end of millennials. So I kind of see things a little different. I don't think that there's a counterculture now, right now. I think that a lot of people, because of the internet has been such a big part of our lives, really, I don't even know if there's a counterculture. Like if there is a counterculture you can think of, right, against the mainstream, you know, let me know in the chat because I really can't think of any. But it used to be kind of driven by that. It used to be driven by like, you know, the last time I could think of it was probably like middle 2000s. We had like the scene emo stuff. There was a whole, your whole identity was built around that music genre, you know? Maybe I would say electronic music before it became like super popular. Maybe in late, early 2010s to mid 2010s, maybe electronic music, festivals, stuff like that, that could be considered at that time a counterculture. But now I personally, because I'm a little detached, probably can't think of a counterculture. So music used to be driven by that, you know, like the hippie movement. You've got like the rebellious, like 80s sort of thing. Like it used to be driven by that. It used to be driven by people. And now it's kind of difficult, in my opinion, to find that. So things, how people process fans and music and all that stuff has really changed. I think that going into it now, that's probably why you have to lean into your audience quite a bit. All right. So keep that in mind. So with that being said, you have to think about if we're leaning into something, it would be probably wise to think about where the people on your customer or fan profile are living online, right? What platforms did they use? Do they use TikTok? Do they use YouTube? Are they a little bit more sophisticated? Are they watching videos that are educational? Are they like sub-niche, like guitar players, for example? And you want to kind of figure out who these people are. Write it down. Every company will have like, sometimes they'll have maybe three if it's like a really big company, but most of the time it's just one. You know, they release a product. Like, who is this for? Is it for moms between the age of 35 to 45 that live in this type of area? Is it more, do they typically live more in the city? All of that stuff. And you want to make sure that you keep, I actually would say write this down and put it on a wall. So like as you're deciding what kind of content to make, you are thinking about where they're located. So you can't just put stuff out into the internet and expect people to come. You really have to try to meet them halfway and figure out where they're at, right? So where do you find this information? You find it based on where the artists, the five that you picked earlier, where they're at, where their biggest followings are at. So like, for example, you pick one artist and they're, you notice that all five of them, or let's say four out of five, are huge on Instagram and YouTube. Well, try to fit there, because that's probably where you're going to have the ability to not steal fans from these artists, but kind of cross over, right? So that's why you want to be where these other artists are. So the second thing is you have to adapt your customer profile or your fan profile based on data and metrics. You're not going to get it right. That's the thing you have to think about. You're never going to get it right 100% of the time. So how do you find this information? How do you tweak it? Because you're always going to want to tweak stuff. I would say once you put music out, use DistroKid, the platform for the podcast. I accidentally ran twice in the ad twice. Go to DistroKid, put your music out, go to Spotify for Artists and just see. You may be surprised. I had, I consider him a friend of, you know, watches the show, or listens on, like Apple Podcasts. He was surprised. Like, and you know, I wasn't surprised. He was surprised about his age demographic. It was like 60 and up. And, he's around my age, you know, he's like in his mid 30s, give or take. And it kind of surprised him, you know? So you may discover that once you get into these tools, like, you know, you can find these tools and your analytics from YouTube, Spotify for Artists, Apple Music for Artists. Even if you have a website, which you should, Google Analytics, which is something that I really recommend that you get into and learn the Google like advertising platform, because it can really kind of shape how you interpret the music business. You know, it really can. It will turn you into a business person, I promise you. So you can get all of these different breakdowns. And the reason why you want to do this is that you may find that you have a cluster of fans in a typical like region, maybe Northwest or something that you just didn't know about. So if you're ever planning a tour, you're going to want to go to that place first, right? You may find that they have some sort of what Google would call an in-audience segment where you can say, you know what? Most of my fans are in this segment of, you know, seeking education or seeking music instruments. And Google can break that stuff down for you on a pretty good level, you know? And so what I would do is I would use all of that stuff, and you want to put out the content. You don't want to limit it too much on who you're aiming for, but you got to put out a lot of content to get that information back. Okay. So that's the first thing that I would say is just put stuff out there to interpret it later to kind of see how you can make tweaks, because you're going to want to lean into the people that are interacting with your music. And so you can try to figure out who those core fans are going to be. And we can get into maybe a different show about how to turn those fans into customers. But I think it's really important that people find a really good tool to kind of bring that data back in. And it could be a lot of work, but once you get into it, it's not that hard. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about different types of content before we start diving into what you should and should not be posting. So the first thing obviously is your music. So I would say, this is just my opinion, your music should be maybe 10 to 20% of the content that you post online. That leaves a lot of room for other things, right? So, I mean, and you should be posting regularly. I'll be honest with you. You should be posting. I would try to post somewhere once a day. If you don't have finished songs once a day, let's say Monday through Friday, that's going to be hard. So there's a lot of stuff out there that we're going to talk about on how to fill those gaps. So let's say you've got one track a month that you record a music video for, you write, produce, all of that stuff, you release it, you have enough time to do the promo, try to shop it out to Spotify playlists, all of that good stuff. And let's see, where you go from there, right? So you make the music, and then you have a couple of different places that you can put that music out in different formats. So the first format obviously is going to be live. So that means, performing out live, recording video, that's a no-brainer, as well as live streaming, you making the music or performing the music. That's also something that's very popular now. And it could be a little difficult for people who make electronic music in the box that aren't DJs. People will consider those artists or producers, depending on what kind of school you're coming from. That would be something that I would say is probably the most challenging thing today with modern music makers. It's like, if you are putting your music, you're taking it from the computer and you're putting it out there, there's no like physicality to it. That's hard. I would say that it's probably a good idea if you're making electronic music, figure out how you could perform that live in some sort of way, whether it be DJing or in a live band or looping, you know, learning an instrument if you don't know one, and trying to see if you can get a performance out of it. You have to do that, you know. It can be difficult. And so I totally get that, but a lot of people who make music just put it out there and it doesn't stick. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't stick, and there's a reason for it. It's because you're not continually pushing people down your content funnel, which I'll have another video about. So there's live and there's recorded. So there's the long form type of music video, something you put a lot of effort into, It's going to be something that is going to be like, you know, something that you probably work really hard on. You probably won't, most likely when you first get started out, won't be able to do like a music video every month when you first get started out. But you should be doing a music video if you're not doing these other things I just talked about once every couple of months, maybe 3 months, and spend the time to make it really good, because that's content that you're going to be able to market later, which we can talk about in a minute. The other type of recorded music content is what I'm going to call social form. So the social form of content is going to be quick stuff like for TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram, that kind of stuff, where maybe it's more in the moment, but you want to try to make this content interactive. It's not one-sided. Like, for example, a music video is a one-sided thing. There's not much you can do in that music video to try to interact with the audience in the content, right? But if you're doing a social type of content for like you playing the music, you're going to want to like maybe ask them in the comments, hey, what do you think? Do you like the song? Should I release it? Try to get some sort of way to interact with those people who do see your video, right? And I would say that this is a really good thing to do, because you want to lean into the music algorithms. So TikTok and now YouTube kind of it's getting there. They're competing for creators, which I talked about in my last episode. They're competing for creators. What that means is they're pushing out a lot of short form content to a lot of new people. And if you get really good at how to use the ecosystem within that platform, whether it's TikTok or YouTube, what tags to use, how to SEO optimize your videos, all of that good stuff, you can really kind of get your music out there to an audience that just won't see it otherwise, okay? So moving on. The other type of content, you're going to have social, obviously, photos, videos, live social, that kind of stuff. You're going to have YouTube, which this is a huge one. YouTube has been gunning for everybody lately. So they're putting all of their content into like a very one ecosystem sort of platform. And what I mean by that is they're segmenting out their long form, like what would be a podcast or like a live show that's like an hour or 45 minutes or what have you. And they're putting that on their own tabs. Then they're also doing like your regular feed, which is like what you would say a 20, 30 minute video, something that's on the mid range. And then the shorts, which are like 60 seconds, right? So they're trying to be the one-stop shop. And now you could even watch the shorts on your television, which you can't do on TikTok. So you can go down the rabbit hole on your couch, you know? So what I would say is that if you decide you want to make content, I would recommend, because the channels are really gunning for you, they're actually paying creators more because of this. What I would say is that you should lean heavy into YouTube. That's my advice. So with that being said, what types of YouTube content is out there for music makers? So there's different like topics or niches. So like guitar players, they're going to want to do gear reviews, all kinds of stuff. There's music reviews, there's gear reviews, there's podcasting, and there's education based. Okay. So, and there's many more, but like those are the ones that I think most people would say are the most engaging. So you want to think about how you can get your content to be in a way, like format in a way where you can get people to watch it longer. And if your content has a good watch time, they will start pushing that content out to other people. Okay. So that's something to think about. Now, going into the different types of creators and the different types of genres, which is kind of where I think the meat of this topic is probably going to be the most informative. I just want to make sure I laid all of those things out so we can kind of like brainstorm together. All right. So taking a step back on your music, I want you to think about what type of music you actually make. And what I mean by that is, it's like, if you make music that you say everybody can get down with, you're making music for nobody. Okay. The best thing you could do for your music while you're making it is niching down, getting really specific, because the best thing you can do is, like, if someone hears your music and they like it, they can't get it from some other artist. So really kind of thinking about that and going back to, like, who your audience is, now you have a bridge, right? And you can find that bridge by doing some research on keywords and research on content. So you can, like I said earlier, you can mimic your top five artists, try to get in there, and then adapt from there, which is always a good idea. Or you can get a little technical and you can do some keyword research based on who you think these people, like, what type of content they may be searching for already. Okay. So let's say, for example, Alex did a, he provided this example. I think this is a perfect one. So metal music, right? You're going to have a lot of people that are listening to metal that are going to be most likely musicians who play those instruments. Great. So gear reviews, no brainer. Lessons, no brainer. You know, that's, you're going to assume that if your music is technically challenging, that you're going to appeal to people who are really into the technicality of music, which would be musicians, rather than if you make a little bit more simple, sort of pop structured stuff, that's probably not going to be the majority of your audience. I would guess that if you're in the chat and you know and appreciate Dream Theater, you know who that is, there's a chance that you at least dabble in an instrument. You know what I'm saying? So that's the first thing, is you want to think about, like, the subject matters. And again, you could find that on your Google Analytics and going through, and you can even run ads to kind of figure this out, but figuring out who your customer is or your fan, right? So the other thing you need to do is, once you start niching down, you can kind of pick from various things like IRL stuff, in real life type of content. I did get a good comment on this, because a lot of people feel the need to vlog and they don't feel comfortable doing that. And that was very popular, I would say, 5 years ago. I think that the pandemic a couple of years ago, when it started, I think vlogging kind of died down, because vlogging used to be very travel heavy. And I don't think it's getting the traction that it used to. So don't feel the need as a musician to start vlogging. I really don't think that it's something that people really pay attention to anymore. But what is popular in place of that is, like, live streaming type of thing, where you are, again, you're interacting more with your audience, you know? So the other thing is pick a non-music niche and then lean into that, right? So for example, I've talked a little bit about this in the podcast in a previous episode, but, like, for me, I love comics and nerdy stuff, all that, right? So if you're a musician, think about something else that you're super knowledgeable in, something that you really appreciate. It could be movies, could be comics, politics, pop culture, sports, comedy, you know, anything that's adjacent to entertainment. And I would combine those things. There's a lot of people out there that do this really, really well. I think the artist Zuby is probably one of them. He makes political content, but also, like, talk show stuff, and then music videos. But the content of what he's, you know, he's a hip hop artist. What he raps about is political in nature, because that's kind of where the fan base lies. So what I was, and this is, I'm going to get to people who don't want to do this in a second. I definitely have some tips on that. But if you are the kind of person who does want to lean into a niche, this is the best thing to do. So once you figure out what that niche is, I would recommend that you lean into it with your content too. Like, you know, try to think about when you write lyrics or tell a story with your lyrics, if it's story driven and less like emotion driven, that you think about how you can connect a hobby that your fans and you could have to the lyrical content of your music. That's something that would be super helpful, because now you have basically, you've doubled down on your fan base, and you can assume that you would get that double down back on how much someone would pay attention to you, right? So if you're camera shy though, I've got some tips for you. I would say that there are other types of content out there, and this is if you want to have like a fan base type of music career. And there's a different type of musician out there that has that makes a living making music, that doesn't have a fan base, doesn't need a fan base, and that's totally cool. And I am going to talk about that too. So what I would say is if you're camera shy, but you can lean into a topic, is that you can always do a non-video podcast, which is totally fine, as well as I think maybe they're like montage related videos. Like one thing that I can think of just off the top of my head is there's this artist that goes by the name I Am Fires, but he's really into Marvel, right? So he's popping up on my feed, and he's making updated like Marvel news types of videos every day. And it's just clips of Marvel stuff while he's talking on the mic, and he edits it out, and that's great. You know what? That works, because it's very it's a very click heavy type of video. It's something that people can consume very quickly. It's if you make it every day, you're going to go down that rabbit hole. It's going to appear on your feed all the time, which it does. And then check this out. Every time you watch that video, At the end, or the middle, he's dropping, you know, check me out on Spotify, I Am Fires, all that kind of stuff. And you know what? I would say that there's probably a significant percentage, not like half, that go and check this artist out. That's totally cool. That's a way to go, you know what? I make content that is kind of pop culture-esque, you know, nerd culture-esque, and I make videos around nerd culture things, and I'm going to put them together, and I'm going to create a fan base that way. All right. So the other thing is that if you're camera shy, you can challenge yourself maybe to not be camera shy. Some people are in the middle where they can go either way. I believe it or not, I'm very introverted. Going live can be a struggle for me, but I do it because I like it. But I know a lot of people who should never go on camera. You know, I can think of a couple people that I know that should never go on camera. They just don't. They don't have the. It's not just ability. They just don't have the. They don't have like the need or want to do it. And there's nothing you can say to that person to convince them to do that. And that's totally cool. And for those people, I would say to think about, if you cannot compete in the social marketplace, to start making music that's driven for a use or a purpose and just go with that. Because you're not going to get fans if you don't play live, and you're not going to get fans if you don't put media out there on the internet. It's just not going to happen. And so if you can't get fans by putting something out other than your music, because if you build it, they will not come. I'm sorry. They won't. Then if you lean into, for example, everybody knows like the lo-fi study beats thing. If you think about it, the lo-fi girl hip hop, I don't know who makes that music. But they get so many streams. It's like probably one of the biggest streams out there on YouTube, 24/7 streaming. You can go on to Spotify, huge numbers, you know. Lo-fi, I think Melon maybe, lots of purpose-driven music. There's I put on spa music for my dogs when I'm away, and you can guarantee, I guarantee you that the artists that are really doubling down on their content that make that kind of music are doing gangbusters financially. There's no way they aren't, you know? They get millions of streams every month. And you can do that too, because that's playlist friendly music. It's music for a purpose. It's not a purpose for you. It's a purpose for how it's being consumed. You could do this with hip hop beats. You could do this with all kinds of music. Now, if you're a vocalist and you don't make music, you probably should, and you don't want to be on the camera, you don't want to make content, I would probably say that you might want to try considering being a songwriter instead. And I know that's a harsh truth, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't, this day and age, be shy and not go out there and expect for someone to attach their time and effort to you if you're not going to be able to put the content out for them. This is entertainment business. You have to entertain people. You have to offer value outside of your music. And I would even say, I've heard some dope tracks on Spotify playlists that I'm jamming. And I love music. Like, the whole show I do is about music. I can't remember any of them. But I do remember people that I find on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, stuff like that, because it's you're using almost all of your senses. And if you play live, you're using all five, you know? So it's really about being able to come out there and you have to make an emotional sell for people to care. You really do. The best time to sell merch is when you've done a killer show. The worst time to sell merch is by putting your link on Instagram and expecting for someone to click something and buy it just because they think it looks cool or they think your beats are dope. They're not going to do that. Why would you don't do that? Why would they do it? They don't, you know? So what I would say is, if that's you and you're the kind of person who just doesn't want to be out there, or maybe doesn't have the time, but you have the time to make the music, maybe you can crank out music all day. How can you take your biggest assets, which would be your songs, and be able to make them work for you? And that would be with playlists that are driven for, like, sleep, study, chill, workout music, all that kind of stuff, and make music for that purpose as you're making it. Or the one that probably makes you more money if you do this more often would be music for sync licensing, which is so hot right now in the last couple of years, because basically music supervisors are the gatekeeper sometimes to blowing up someone's music career. And what they do is they go out and they pick music for film, television, commercials, all that kind of stuff. And they handle all of the legal stuff behind it. And this is why I never recommend that someone sample music, because immediately when you sample music or you use royalty-free loops or sounds, you almost always are disqualifying yourself to be considered for a licensing opportunity. And some of these licensing opportunities will pay you so much money and you're a nobody. So what type of music is that? Well, again, it's music for a purpose, but it can have words. So if that's you and you write, you're a singer-songwriter, I would lean into genres for film. For example, if I'm watching a horror movie, I may not have a love song that's bubbly, you know? But if I'm watching a horror movie and it's got vocals on it, I could picture like something about running could be a subject matter, or being afraid, or the dark, or something scary. Like, picking a subject that's common in film and writing from that subject, that's the other way to do this. Okay. So there's three ways. I know there's other ways too. You could sell beats, you can do all kinds of stuff. But I think that if you're someone who makes music and you want a career, these are the three big ones. So being an artist, making a lot of content, pushing content out there as a content creator first and a music maker second. We don't live in 2010 anymore. This is, you know, we're 2020s and on. This is how it's going to be, you know? Or you can do playlist friendly music and shop it out and market it. And you can become very successful doing that. And the other one is making music specifically for sync opportunities. And I could probably dive in a whole big thing about that maybe in another episode, or I'm definitely going to be getting that into a lesson on my Patreon. So with that being said, I've got some people in the chat saying hello. What's up, everybody? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go into another topic for just a second. And in a couple minutes, we're going to have a guest join us, which is super exciting. So what I would say, Remit, if you're, I know you're watching, this is probably a good time to start, start joining in, and, I can accept you into the chat once we move over to that. But I wanted to go into the collective. What is that, right? The collective. So, I know that I've commented on the BTS business approach quite a lot on this channel. I definitely have. I think that that is probably, if you are a pop group or you are a songwriting group, that you probably have a much better chance succeeding in that type of structure, for sure, without a doubt. The other thing I would say is that if you're not in that situation and you're not like making a music group for success, and having auditions, and you don't have like the operations built or being built behind the scenes, which is most people, there's something called a music collective or a songwriting collective or a producer collective, and you can collaborate with people to make yourself better. And this is super important. This is part of the lean method that I'm going to record a topic on in my Patreon. So your collective is a group of people, it could be at least 3 to 5 people that do exactly what you do. They do exactly what you do. So they do, if you're a producer and you make hip hop beats, okay, fine. Go find another 3 or 4 people who do the same thing as you. And what you're going to do is you're going to meet on a weekly basis or daily basis, or go through a Discord channel or something and get feedback on everything that you do. The songwriting, I'm talking about the production, the marketing methods, and you learn together. And what I would say is that every time you make a mistake, if you tell those other people and they tell you, you could just avoid all of those hiccups. And if you've got 5 people in your group and you constantly stay in contact, then you'll be able to avoid, I would say, 5x of the roadblocks, you know what I'm saying? 5x of the roadblocks that you're going to have as an artist. Because if let's say John, you know what, I tried this, didn't work, and he lets me know, I go, make sure I don't do that. Hey, you know what? I did this, didn't work. I'm going to tell you, John. John, guess what I did that did work? I did this. John's going to do that now. And you're always trying to one-up each other on what works and what doesn't work. It's not like a competition. It's more of like, how can you improve each other's lives by sharing information, sharing opportunities, and doing all that? It's a great thing to do. So find people that do what you do and grow together. If you're a band, oh my gosh. First of all, you're able to double down on the fact that you've got already have a collective within itself. You can take on responsibilities. The bass player can, you know, be the person responsible for the merch. The drummer can book gigs. I mean, you can really share a lot of different responsibilities. And it's a lot easier, in my opinion, to be successful as a band because of that. As a solo artist, it's so much harder. You have so much to do. Everybody's got jobs, maybe, you know, and you may not have a job, but I hope you do, you know, or you got something that maybe you're taking care of kids or something. But your time is super important. You're going to be losing time every day. So you have to be as efficient as you possibly can. So as a band, you're already in the right direction. Now, imagine you're in a band or a group. Find 2 other bands or groups that are in the same spectrum of music that you do and do the same thing. So maybe you've got like 4 people per band, you've got 3 bands, you've got 12 people as a collective. You're working on your craft yourself, but you can all share, let's say, 1 videographer. You can all share one promotion person. You can all share one show, right? So you can open up, you can book your own show, share all of your fans. So if I like band A and B and I see band C, man, I'm going to love band C most likely if they're also just as good and you're trying to make each other better. So this is something that I feel like I know that Royal could definitely identify with this. I see Royal in the chat. When I lived in Houston, there were a number of artists and bands that played collectively together on almost every show. Almost, right? And so we had like Jody Seabody and the Whirls. We had Skeptacynic. We had... I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank here because those, it was like 15 years ago, maybe. Those are ones that I remember because I worked on their albums. And they had, if you're in the chat, so Royal, give me some examples. You and Jason had a group too, that played a couple shows with Skeptacynic. I'm trying to remember. And Stu was in that group. There was a few bands that will play shows together, and you do this naturally in like sometimes in high school if you have bands, but you share the shows and it's great because as soon as one hardcore fan goes to a show and they see the other bands, there's a decent chance that they're going to like those other bands too, especially if you're cool and you hang out with people after the show. Now, there's many ways you can dice that around. I think that is a really good way to approach making music. Now, the other thing I want to say before we move into the interview portion of the podcast is I would say that when you are looking at people who don't make music but are content creators, I would subscribe to the people at the top right now. You should definitely be subscribing to anything that Mr. Beast does, for example, on how well and why he does all of his content the way that he does, his story, that he literally, like I saw a video of him, he wakes up in his office and works, right? And I know like that's, but he still does that, you know, like after all of the success. Imagine if you could do that making music. Imagine if you could wake up out of bed and you turn to your right. And some people have this already because they're in a studio apartment and they're making music. And you just, there's your computer. Go make stuff. And there's your video camera. Go make stuff. Subscribe to people who do really well outside of music and take tips from them, especially if they go on podcasts and offer advice and all that good stuff. So what I would say is that if you want to be a part of that kind of community, the first thing I would do is I would try to find people locally to you. I know not everyone has that, but there are plenty of Discord channels, for example. Like I'm trying to think of the one right now. I'm going to pull it up and I'll tell you what it is. I got invited to it and there are a bajillion messages. I had to mute it. I just couldn't take it. But if you're looking for collaborative opportunities, you could find these people. Songwriters Are Us, and the R has the quotes. That's one, and there's a whole bunch of other ones, but there's a gajillion people in there, and all they do is pass around ideas. That's the kind of environment that you need if you want to be successful. You have to learn with other people, That's super important, and get better with these people. So just to kind of recap a couple things. You definitely want to make sure that you are watching what other people do that are a step and a half, at least maybe 2 to 5 steps above you. Want to see what they're doing. You want to mimic that and then adapt based upon your fan profile and learn and adapt from there. But the most important thing is don't sit on your ideas. There's so many things that go wrong in just this live stream, for example, things that I haven't even had the opportunity to do that I really want to do, but I do the podcast and the live stream anyways because it's better than me sitting on it and waiting till it's perfect. So at the end of the day, you're better off making content that doesn't work and adapting it as long as you're learning from your mistakes. That's super important. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking like a minute. and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk to our guest, Rimmed, and we'll be back in just a second. Rimmed, thanks for joining the live stream, the three live streams that we did in 2 seconds. Yeah.
Well, I mean, thank you for having me on all three.
Yeah, man.
My name is Rimmed. That's RIMID. You can find me on all platforms. I run a label called Dead Poets. It's kind of a group. We do R&B, boom bap, trap, pretty much anything hip hop, you know. We just dropped this album called Uncomprehensive on November 10th. It's a classic hip hop album, I would say. Y'all are gonna love it if you listen to it. No matter what genre of hip hop you listen to, you definitely are gonna find some way of listening to it and enjoying it, which I think we took a lot of time to craft it that way. So I feel like everybody so far has fell into the way that we wanted it to be. So I think y'all would like it. So go stream that after you guys watch the show.
That's awesome. And just real quick, if you could tell us, this is a label release with multiple artists.
Yeah. So this is me and my homie Dapa, DXPA. He's also on all platforms. You can find him on all platforms underneath Dapa Virus. We're trying to get a name change right now, but it's kind of hard because we're doing a whole like distribution switch from him, because he's going from United Masters to Symphonic with Dead Poets, and like, because I'm his publisher now, so I'm publishing all his music. And so really it's just kind of getting all that together. That's the only difficulty. But other than that, it's just me and Dapa right now. Back before when I was on the show the first time, I was running Dead Poets. We were trying to get it off the ground. I had like 7 artists with me, but they all kind of just didn't like take music as serious as I do, and so that just made it kind of fall apart. So I was like, kind of have to find somebody who takes it just as serious as me. And Dapa is he's if not more serious, just as serious. So
where did you find Dapa at? How did you guys meet?
We literally met through a now beef that I have with this kid who's we're dissing on this album, literally. His name's Wonder. We met on Snapchat about a year ago, but we never really hung out until like five months ago. And then we literally, the first day we hung out, we made, I'm sorry to curse, but the song name is Stupid Motherfucker. Okay. We made that. And that's the story, man. Like that, it, from there on out, every single song just came out like perfect. It was just like, I don't know. It was meant to be. It was song after song after song. It's perfect. It's beautiful.
That's awesome.
It made me feel like a real artist. So I'm coming out here trying to do it as best as I can.
What do you think? Yeah. So like you, before that, you were doing a lot of music, you know, on your own, you know, before you started getting your, I would say collective, like going back to what we were talking about earlier. What do you think the dynamic would be like? How can you explain that to somebody who has not worked with another artist before? Like, what's the pacing like?
Working with other artists can be really, really stressful, especially if you're not like confident in your music, you know, or like confident in yourself in a way that like, you know, that you feel like the other artist might be better or something like that. That's something that you shouldn't focus on, you know. You should focus on it as in like, you are both artists attacking this song. You guys are coming together to make a piece of art, you know. And if you do that, you can really actually create something that's good. And being in a group session or just in like an environment like that can really change your whole outlook on being an artist. And it can make you a lot better at attacking the whole thing or playing the game in itself, because like it can make you have a better confidence level, I guess. You know, your ego can get stroked pretty good, I guess. And especially, you know, it also can open you up to being more critiqued, I guess. That's a good thing, is being critiqued and being able to take critique. If you can take your critiques and all that, then, you know, definitely it's the best idea is to work with another artist, especially in person. Don't do it over the internet, because that's really hard. But you can always do it over the internet. You're just not going to get the same vibe that you would in person, because it's just a whole another level of things. But you also kind of have to befriend and understand that artist as well. And you kind of got to listen to their music as well. You can't just be like, hey, I want to be on a song because they're tracking or whatever. And that it just doesn't, you know, it's got to be two peas in a pod pretty much. Like, you guys got to work together perfectly, just like a couple or something, you know?
Yeah. Do you find that, like, have you tried to work with other artists, like, online without in person? Like, in could you tell us maybe, like, some failures or successes with that?
Yeah, actually, I met this really dope artist. I'm really upset that I haven't been able to make this song or drop this song yet, because I've been working on my album. But his name is Ace. This dude's wicked, man. He can spit crazy bars, man. I've never heard a little boom bap rapper like this. And I was like, I just met him on Instagram through, I think it was actually through your live, honestly. I don't know. Or not your live, but your other show. And I was like, yo, you're tight. I like his little Instagram bars. His mixing could have done a little bit better, but I was like, yo, I'll mix it, whatever. And so I sent him this song called Attack on the Clones, which is kind of like just a song that's us kind of like sending shots at like the clone rappers in the industry, not really like just the industry, but like people who's trying to like just copy a rapper directly, their style, their clothing, their ideology, everything, you know. And that's just like, we don't like that, you know, with Dead Poets. And he didn't like that either. He actually really enjoyed the ideology or the idea behind the song and the concept. And he made probably a better verse than I did. It's making me like, I got to go back and rewrite. And that's almost 6 months ago. So, you know, it's a big deal. But other than that, you know, I've also worked with several artists that that have failed on me a lot of times. It'll be morally like I'll send them a song and they won't get the verse on time or something like that, you know? And it's just like, or they will... I'll send them out a song and they'll send me back a bad quality audio or something like that. And it's like, they won't record with the same mic or something like that. You know, just, there's just certain levels to it that can lead up to it that make it kind of hard to record with somebody over the internet, but it's still possible. I've done it before. I made lots of songs that way, but they're not going to be released because of internal dialogue.
Yeah, I got you. So I guess like one of the perks about like working with someone like in person versus over the internet is like there's a lot more pressure, I think, like when you're in the room with somebody to like hold your own, not just on like your skill sets, but like coming like basically like making sure that you can take the trajectory to the next step. You know, like if it needs to, if you need to do X, Y, and Z, like you're with that person, you build that trust and you're kind of like obligated in a heavier way to like do what you need to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's harder to flake, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. That does make sense. Especially when you're in an environment like hip hop and stuff like that. Because it's like you don't want to be, you know, considered slower or not slower, but like I guess like weak in the field of lyricism. I guess, you know, you don't want to be considered slow up with your lyrics, like, and all that. And that's a big deal. But like if you're going into something like pop or something like that, really, I feel like getting it down and doing that online would be easier than just doing it in person, because it's like then you can kind of just leave it to your own views and your own, you know, take on the song rather than having somebody breathe down your neck about the song. But in hip hop, it's kind of needed because the critiques is valid, you know?
Yeah, I definitely see that. Do you find like working with other musicians and artists, producers, that there are some common red flags that might lead you to think that they could be flakes?
A common red flag with me that I see a lot of the time is if people aren't really posting their music on their socials. That's just like at all. Like, I mean, not really at all. Like, they could post like their music, but it'd be like 3 posts, 2 posts, not, and they'll drop a song, but they won't drop it all. They won't drop like a post for the song, you know?
And right. It'll just be like a clip.
Yeah. And if like, say, you know, I'm not one to like really have a high feature price. My feature price is only $50, you know? But like, if somebody comes to me and wants a feature, I say, I need $50 to, you know, work with you. That's how I work. I do business. And they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do it right now. I'll pay you later or something like that. And it'll be like, I understand that. Yeah. You know, I can give you like a leeway or whatever, like that. But I'll never see my money, of course, you know, and I don't really care about that. But it shows that you're not really serious about your music enough to be like, hey, this is good enough to put money into. Well, I believe my stuff is good enough to put money into. I'll put $100,000 into it right now if I had it. But, you know, somebody who isn't confident, like, say, me a year ago, I wasn't really confident when I came on the on your first episode. And I still did that, you know, just if you aren't confident, you're insecure and all that, like, just push and do it harder until you get to that level. Cause there's a point that you can reach by doing this that in your life that you want to reach. This is something that you want to get to, especially, with how life is looking. Yeah, you want to get to a confident level right now. With these times, and that's just how it is. With music, you know, you gotta keep it 100 too, because if you're not making music directly for yourself too, then you're not really making it for anybody else, you know. If you make music for yourself, you're making it for people who are just like you, and those people are going to be directly put into your genre, and that's the people you want as well. And so you being confident, you having all that area, you're going to have some way to make it in all that. That's just how it works.
Yeah, no, I get that too. I think a couple of things, kind of unpacking a little bit what you said about the $50, like, I think that's a really good way to gatekeep, like, if someone's serious, because at the end of the day, like, depending on who you are, like, $50 may or may not be that much. But if you're serious about the track, like, $50, that's not that much. You know what I'm saying? Like, people pay like hundreds of dollars for a non-exclusive beat. So like, to have someone actually put the work in for $50, like, that just shows like you're committed, that you want to work with somebody.
People will sit there and pay for a verified artist because they have a verified symbol, and that verified artist won't post any of the song that they just made with that person. And I think that, you know, right there, I mean, I understand, you know, like, they didn't pay for the promotion. Well, you didn't pay for promotion, you know, and people are going to be expecting promotion. When you work with the independent artists, you're going to get promotion regardless, because they're not going to be thinking that way, you know.
Right.
And not even like, even with me, I don't care. I don't pay for a promotion. It's free, you know, that's free. I don't care about the exposure. Everybody gets exposure. That's what everybody deserves. It's the internet, it's social media, you know. When it comes down to it, people really, they'll sit there and they'll pay for a verified artist and expect all the views to come in when they're not gonna, if they're not going to be promoting it, you know. And that's really where it comes in, is like, people need to find more of a way to just work with the independent industry, as long as you're independent, until you get to the point to where you're in the industry to work with the industry artists, or at least a part of the independent industry, because there's a part a subculture of the industry that is independent, that's just filled with like Russ or, you know, Joyner Lucas and stuff like that, like small independents that got really big, you know, and those are straight industry people now.
Yeah, I kind of see, I see the industry like really split up into three. Like you've got like the, you know, mainstream, like people that we all can kind of like, you know, talk about and we know them from, like they do big concerts or whatever. Then you've got like the successful independent industry, you know, like there's a bunch of people that we could also name that are a little bit more like niche than something that's mainstream. Then you've got like the amateur scene, which people are trying to figure something out, and it's really kind of like trying to level up, you know. But the thing is I find that a lot of people in the amateur sort of independent scene, they really, the reason why they're there for a long period of time, you know, because it takes time, but a long period of time, is because they don't know what they're doing. And they assume that like everybody else around me is doing X, Y, and Z, but all the people that they're like, that they're, you know, getting that information from are not successful either. You know what I'm saying? Like they're just doing what they think they should be doing. Like they only put music on SoundCloud because they think that's what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You're right. That's something that I was sitting here. I've done music for 11 years now. My birthday was November 10th. And so that marked 11 years for me. I've been doing this since I was 11 or since I was 10, I'm sorry. And while I was rapping, man, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing in the first, I'd say 9-8 years of this, you know. And I recorded 2 albums, probably 45 singles, already dropped them on all platforms, you know, all that. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, and that made it to where I looked not bad, but like my music doesn't come off the same as it should now as it would if I would have taken it more serious back then. And not only that, if I had learned more about how to actually do this music stuff, because now I actually am understanding it in a way that's like above the level, you know, that I normally would. So it's like, I don't know. It's really like, it's taken a long time for me to get here into this point, but where with marketing, it seems it's always been just there for me. So it's like with other people, I really don't know how it would be, you know?
Yeah.
I've always been able to just post my stuff, but like when it comes to, cause I've always wanted my music on all platforms. I thought that was the main thing that everybody should do. I thought that was like, boom, you know, like it's like, I don't know. It was like, evolution just like pushed me towards doing all this stuff or something. I don't know. Cause like, I was like, I'm going to go directly to, doing, SoundCloud, and then I'm going to go to all platforms and I'm going to drop all this blah, blah, blah. But I was still dropping like half-assed music, like it wasn't nothing like I'm dropping now or what I'm making now.
But don't you find that, like, you know, I think you kind of like your undertone probably said this a little bit, don't you feel like if you didn't put the music out there that you wouldn't have understood the ecosystem to kind of like learn and grow from that, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. But if I hadn't put my music out there and had people give me their critiques and all that, then I absolutely would never have gotten to this level now.
But
if I were to have went to like a school or something like that, or like just looked online and just kind of like listened to people more, I honestly probably would have found out how to do this. But it's just when you have like ADHD and all that, you can't really like think about everything at the same time. Like people can just kind of pull things right away in their mind, and for me it's like it comes naturally for me. And so when I make music, when I post videos, anything like that, it's just natural. And people be like posting like it's a job. I can't do that. Like, I just post like it's my natural life, you know? And that's just, and it looks like I'm posting like a job, you know? But I'm just posting like my natural life. It's easy. It's nothing, you know? But,
yeah.
And anybody can do it. But I do see a lot of struggles that I've had though with that, and coming up with music and all that has definitely had that sort of impact on me with dropping my music first before having any type of understanding of it.
You kind of have to, and like, you know, we're talking a little bit about like ADHD, and I feel like a lot of creative people and people who have ADHD, whether it's related or not, like they have a hard time learning in a very structured environment, you know? And yeah. I find that like you either are able to thrive in that environment, or you have to just go through things and learn on your own and fail and then find out what works and what doesn't work, and then just do that. You know, and that seems to be like in my experience, I learned that way. You know, like when you put too much in like a textbook, like, oh, I need to do this, and this, it really prevents you from thinking outside the box. But also at the same time, if you're thinking like within that lens, it prevents you from learning and developing when new things come your way. You know, you're not like looking out for new things because you're thinking like, oh, I learned in school, I have to do this, then I have to do this, and then I have to do this. And that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. You and know? That's why you see the industry, like artists who can't evolve with the time or nothing like that is because they sat there and they learned it that way instead of doing it naturally. And that's something that is, it's more, I feel like it's more beautiful to be a natural artist and to have more of a understanding of music naturally than it is to be like directly understood because you learned it with knowledge. Like, I don't know, like I'm trying to come up with the words right away, but that's just like, that's what I mean. Like, it's like, I think it's amazing that you can do it naturally and just become a natural artist. Yeah, I think that's awesome. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think like, I don't think this applies to a lot of people who make music, but I think it applies to a lot of people who don't make music, but they assume like you have a natural talent of something or you don't. And that means like, that's going to dictate where you end up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't. No. You can absolutely like be bad at music and be at top tier. Like, anything you can do any sort of genre and make it in the industry as long as you know how to market it, and that's all it takes is marketing. That's it.
Yeah.
It's nothing other than that, and that's something that a lot of people don't understand. But there's also, you don't need marketing. Marketing isn't the only thing. A lot of people have blown up without marketing and they made it without marketing, but that's true art, and that's hard to make people listen to or to take an example from, especially when it's something that people aren't listening to or they're new to. So,
well, it's the outliers, you know. A lot yeah. of people bank on the outliers, like especially when they haven't gone through an actual grind, like when they're running it like a business, you know. Mm-hmm. they're operating on like fantasy land, you know what I'm saying, where they go, oh, like Chance the Rapper did this. That's the way to do it. I could do that too. It's like, no, Chance the Rapper is an anomaly. Like, there yeah. are thousands of people who are just as talented as him that did it a different way that are more feasible than what he did. Or it could be like, you know, maybe that's the structure you need. But I think people put the blinders on when they're thinking about examples, because people will like, if you say like a generality, you know, about like how someone got to X, Y, and Z, they'll be like, oh yeah, but what about so-and-so? I'm like, yeah, well, that's one person.
Yeah. And I could be like, cause to me, you know, I'm the greatest rapper alive to me, but to another person, they're the greatest rapper alive. And that's how it goes. Cause it is fantasy land. Exactly what you're saying. Understand, like, obviously I'm not the greatest rapper alive. We have Kendrick Lamar here, of course. Right. But when it comes down to it, I feel like I hold a superb power over a lot of these newer artists who came out the gate thinking that they understand music the way they do. But I really understand hip hop and only hip hop. And I understand the direct history and the line of it. And so when it comes down to it, my art is just going to be direct hip hop and directly art. You know, it's not going to be some thrown out garbage that I just trying to make some money with. You know, it's something I'm always trying to hurt, trying to make somebody feel something with, you know, for hurt your feelings. But other than that, I got like, I'm sorry.
It's all good, man. It's all good. My dogs interrupted the podcast last week, so it happens. And we went down, the whole stream went down earlier, so this is nothing.
Yeah. You know? I seen when your dog's walking in the back earlier.
Oh, yeah. It's better. I decided to let them in because I try to shut them out and they're like not having it, you know. They're like, let me in. So they're a little bit more chill right now. But no, I think you have a really healthy way to approach like making music, and everyone can have like their own distinct way. But as long as you have a method and you have a way to approach it that you feel like you can adapt and grow, that's what's really important, you know? So I think that's really cool. And the fact that you go out of your way to make a company, to better yourself and someone else, I think is really smart.
And this company isn't just to better myself and somebody else. This can better other artists too. Like if anybody is watching this and they are a boom bap R&B lyricist, they like that older type of vibe, not even older, like I like trap stuff too, but I like lyricists, like people who are meaning art, and they only breathe art. Rap is my infinite dedication. That's what RIMID means, RIMID. That means that forever I'm going to make music. Until I die, until I can no longer do it, I'm going to do it until I drop. And if that is your meaning too, that's what your outlook on life, I want you a part of Dead Poets. Like, I want that to be a part. So Uncomprehensive is just a taste of what is to come when it comes to Dead Poets. And I think if y'all listen to Dapa as well, y'all find an extreme likeness to him. And especially if you like Juice WRLD or XXXTentacion or Ski Master Slump God or I don't know, Jeffrey. He's his own artist, but those are those vibes. He can throw those vibes very perfectly. And that post is just, it's a crazy idea to have in my head, because what I have is such a big idea, but I can definitely pull it off if I have the right amount of people around me. And that's all I need. So if y'all are watching this and y'all are interested in being a Dead Poet, go ahead and hit my socials, RIMID the GOAT anywhere. RIMID DA GOAT, GOAT, you know. If y'all are interested, I don't care. If y'all don't want to be a part of it, you don't want to be a part of it. I'm going to keep on doing it, me and Dapa. However.
Yo, also follow RIMID on TikTok. He makes like I think your TikToks are hilarious, man. Sometimes you'll like cut in on things like, and I'm not expecting it and it's hilarious. But give RIMID a follow on socials. He's there, you know, like he was saying, he's doing it because it's like natural. And that's super important. He'll definitely be entertained, you know.
You will. As long as I stay entertaining, I feel like, you know.
No, that's good, man. It's good. It's cool. I feel like you know, we'll probably experience another like content turn before like the end of like this decade, you know. But yeah. I feel like you're doing something that is smart by like really kind of using the platforms how they are intended to be used. I think will help you evolve with the way that content like plays out like over the next few years, you know? So I think you're doing a lot of cool stuff, and I think you've got a lot to offer, and your music is fun and it's cool and it's good, and you have a good story. Do you have any advice for musicians before we sign off?
If you are struggling with your mental health, don't stop. Don't give up. You got this.
There you go.
That's all.
Sometimes people want to give up. They think it's because they're stressing themselves out. But if you're using music as a vehicle, just keep going.
Keep going.
Keep going. Love it. I love it. All right, Rimmed, thank you so much for joining the stream. I appreciate it. Thanks for sitting through the technical issues. We'll put all piece right. The two things together for the full episode, and we'll put it out as a single video. So anyways, thanks for joining, man. We'll have you back on another episode, hopefully.
Thank you. I'll definitely right. come back.
All right. Sounds Peace. Good. All right. Bye. Okay. So that was a pretty awesome interview. Rimmed's a super cool guy. So like we were saying, go ahead and check out his music and check out his socials. Thank you, everybody, for sitting through what was probably one of the most frustrating technical issues I think I've ever had on the podcast ever, by a long shot. But we'll just get it fixed. You know what I'm saying? We'll get it fixed. You learn and you grow. And if anything, I always say this, it's always better just to do what you got to do and learn and grow from that. And some things will be in your control and a lot of things just won't be in your control. You know what I'm saying? I don't have control over whether my streaming software crashes, no matter what I do, other than use something else, you know what I'm saying? Which may have to happen if it keeps going on. But what I want to do is I just kind of want to close out the stream a little bit. I want to make sure that I give everybody a shout out that did watch the stream. If you're watching this at a later date, I will be doing this 12 p.m. Saturdays, unless I'm taking some sort of break or vacation or family type of thing, 12 p.m. Saturdays. You can also join the stream too if you'd like. We can chat about music. I can have multiple people on here. But I may just stick with one for now because the crash that happened earlier. But I want to thank you. I want to thank everybody for joining. Check out the Patreon. I do have a lot of cool stuff there. I've got contacts, contract templates. I've got playlist links and email addresses and all kinds of stuff there. It's a resource for everybody that is a musician. I kind of put it all together in one place for a pretty decent price. And if you have suggestions or recommendations for reactions, that's the place to do it. So now I've got a paywall because I only really have a few hours a week to put into the podcast. And so you'll be seeing different clips and bite-sized clips throughout this. So I really appreciate everybody here. And I'll see you next week. Peace.